of his mouth. His respiration was down, and his pulse had dropped so far it was difficult to register at the pressure point in his wrist. Jack and Ryan stood in the main entrance of the multiplex, watching the line of shadows move away into the setting sun, watching them until the last one had waved and vanished. The albino teenager turned away, looking at the squat building behind them.
Best check out all around.
Ryan took a deep breath, savoring the delicious scents of pinyon and sagebrush that floated across the plateau of Bear Claw Ridge. The light was fading fast.
Wish we could meet them out here.
Like old times, Ryan.
Sure. You and me, head to head, eye to eye. But we gotta go inside and hide in the dark. Watch over Abe. And hope those sticky sons of bitches walk on by.
Bear Claw Ridge had never been a winter settlement. Not once. The blacktop generally became difficult in September, with only four wheels able to pick a cautious way through. By October, the red barrier came down, and the route up was closed off. A few cross-country jocks would try to ski and climb up to the notch, but everything was shut down, and everyone had gone. Gradually, it became a ghost town from autumn right through to late April or May. The thick walls of the Beacon Multiplex Cinema were well insulated, and a powerful generator kept it heated until the caretaker came in the spring to open up again. Like Telluride, not that far to the north, Bear Claw Ridge had its own film festival, specializing in cult classics from the previous century and forgotten directors. But it was a long drive, and the motel was archaic and uncomfortable. The Holocaust of January 2001 only completed the process of the little township's slow death. There was a ragged, brittle poster still clinging to a wall in the old lobby, high up in a corner. The last presentation of the Beacon, at its largest screen in September of the year 2000, Attack of the 50-Foot Woman. In a dusty corner was a collection of discarded ticket stubs from the last day's performance, rustling like dried leaves in a graveyard. The interior was surprisingly undamaged, partly due to the extreme isolation of the place. Only the occasional hunter had passed by the ville during the drifting decades, while the sturdy construction of the cinema had kept it tight and solid. The smell of damp and urine permeated the interior, as it did in any similar building anywhere in Deathlands. But many of the seats remained in the three auditoriums, and the tattered silver rags of one of the screens still hung in place. The maroon flock paper dangled in baroque peeling strips, and a carving of a pair of peacocks glowered down from above the projection box. Ryan had seen pictures of movie houses in old books and magazines, had even seen flickering glimpses of them on the rare old vid. But this was the best preserved one he'd ever seen. Abe was sleeping in the largest of the viewing rooms, beneath a tilted sign that proclaimed it as Screen 1.
Catch us here and we chilled.
Outside, the light was failing fast, and its filtered rays were barely penetrating the auditorium.
Yeah, we'll have to move Abe out of here. There's a broken display counter in the main lobby. We'll get him behind that. I'll take that projection box. Got a trap out under the roof. I checked it before everyone left.
Where do you want me?
Where do you want to be?
Could be one stays with Abe.
Yeah, look, Abe's my friend. My problem. My responsibility. You take that little room up there, Jack. And I'll stick down in the lobby with Abe.
Abe didn't move a muscle as he was carried up the shallow stairs and out through the broken swing doors into the main access area of the multiplex cinema. Ryan lifted up the broken plastic counter and made a shelter with it, covering Abe and leaving himself enough room to slide in beside him. It was a good fire position, with a fine range across the entrance to the main doors. He could see anyone coming into the Beacon, either from outside or from the sky-high mall along the way. Jack vanished into the dark, through a concealed door, and up a narrow flight of stairs into the little projection box, with its rusting and broken comp control equipment that had run the vid films for all three of the theaters in the complex. Ryan stood a moment, trying to guess what it must have been like to visit a picture palace in the old pre-nuke days. He knew that movies had once been the great family attraction in the United States, but he wasn't altogether clear about when that had been. He thought it could have covered the last quarter of the 20th century, but it might have been 50 years earlier than that. Information about social life before the blurring effect of the long winters was incredibly hard to come by. Doc was sometimes helpful, but his own sense of any time scale was so confused and erratic that he had once sworn to Ryan that he had actually seen the Apache war chief Geronimo driving in a gleaming Cadillac automobile. and Ryan knew that was ridiculous. He checked out Abe, but there didn't seem much change. If anything, his breathing seemed to be a little more steady, and his pulse was just a tad stronger. But he was still unconscious, occasionally moaning and muttering something inaudible. On an impulse, Ryan decided to go outside. He eased open the small door, calling out a warning.
It's me, Jack.
Okay.
They coming?
I don't know. Gonna take a look and see if I can spot them.
Be careful.
Shoo. Shell.
He pushed the door closed again, feeling it fit snugly into the padded wall. The main door moved at a touch, and he was out into the New Mexico night. The temperature had fallen sharply in the past half hour, and Ryan could see his own breath as it plumed around him. Unless it was bitterly cold, you could prevent that by blowing hard and taking shallow breaths in and out. There was a slice of moon sailing calmly behind banks of raggedy cloud. It reflected off the acres of broken glass along the frontage of the Sky High Mall, making it seem to glow like a magical fortress. There was no sign of life, though Ryan caught the far-off sound of a pack of coyotes hunting its prey through the late evening. On a narrow, soft shoulder at the edge of the blacktop, he walked there, feeling his boots sinking silently into the dirt, keeping the belt of conifers close to his left side. He had the rifle across his back, the Sig Sauer drawn and ready in his right hand. Twice he stopped and crouched, squinting toward the point where the trail opened onto the overgrown highway. But there was no movement. Nothing broke the plane of the horizon. Halfway toward it, Ryan stopped, dropping to his knees. Something was there, keeping low on the opposite side of the blacktop, about 300 yards away from him. For several long minutes, there wasn't a flicker of movement, but Ryan knew his instinct was right. There was a hunting owl behind him, passing overhead like a vengeful spirit, its fawn wing feathers tipped with silver. It floated toward the far side of the road, suddenly cutting up and away as it neared where Ryan had seen someone hide. That was enough. It was time to go back to the multiplex and hide, and wait. The Stickies had arrived. It was easy to get back into the Beacon Cinema without alarming any of the Stickies. The screen of the trees gave a perfect backdrop, and the soft shoulders swallowed up any sounds. Ryan paused for a moment by the doors, staring back into the gloom, trying the traditional hunter's trick of looking a little to the side of what you actually want to see. But there was nothing moving out there. He'd carried out a full wreck of the complex of ruined buildings, finding that there were a couple of backways into the multiplex movie house, an emergency fire exit around the back that had probably doubled as a staff entrance, and a narrow broken window at the side away from the mall, in what had once been the restrooms. There was a security bar inside the door, and Ryan had managed to jam it into place to keep it closed. A serious attack would easily shift the bar, but it would also make a terrific clatter and give plenty of warning. Ryan took a last look through the smeared armaglass, pausing as he thought he detected movement in the watery moonlight. But it didn't much matter now. The Stickies were on their way and would reach Bear Claw Ridge in a matter of minutes. Ryan opened the hidden door a couple of inches.
They're coming, Jack.
Ready.
He crossed the lobby, knelt, and wriggled under the makeshift barricade, alongside the motionless figure of Abe. Time passed. Every nerve strained. Ryan could almost hear seconds passing. As the night grew colder, the building began to shrink around him. Tiny contractions in the concrete and the underpinning steel girders made faint sounds, like a raw fingertip rubbing on the inside of a long-buried lead coffin. Every noise tugged at Ryan's attention. Each time it happened, he listened harder, wondering if it could be a Sticky trying to crawl in through the broken window at the side of the building. He glanced down at his luminous wrist chron. It was just after 8 o'clock. 10 more minutes crept by. Ryan wondered what was going through Charlie's mind out there in the chill night. The leader of the Stickies was less than 100 paces away, crouched in the darkness at the edge of the forest, listening to the breeze as it stirred the branches above his head. His force was stretched out behind him, waiting for his next order. Charlie's mind was clear and calm. He was humming a dissonant tune to himself. He reviewed his options and thought back over the past 24 hours.
Good and bad, bad and good, do, 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 do. Bad times, good times, Bud and Gad, Ted Bonds, and...